I know how intimidating beekeeping can be, especially in those first couple of years, and not knowing what you need, what to do, or where to find help can be downright scary. That's why I created the AI-assisted Beekeeping for Newbies mobile app to be right there with you as you start your beekeeping journey. Loaded up with checklists, guides, and one of my favorites, a bunch of queen bee photos to help you get better at locating them during inspections. I created this app to provide you with a single source to help jumpstart your learning and make you a better beekeeper. Go to studio.com/beekeeper. That's studio.com/beekeeper to take advantage of the limited time 20% off launch special. Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you very, very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out, Jeff, at beekeepingfornewbies.com. That's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. Well, today we have some really cool things to kick things off with, but before I go there, I do want to bring up one piece of bad news, and then we'll get that out of the way. For those of you who've been keeping track at home, you've heard me discuss and mention my good friend Mo, M-O-E, the cat, and I affectionately refer to him as an aging loved one who needed elder care. Well, good old Mo, he and I have been buddies for a long time. He was, everybody knows Phoebe, the Phoebe keeper. It was Phoebe's cat since she was really, really young. And Mo, we used to do this thing. So if you've ever heard of the grocery store called Trader Joe's, well, years ago I traded stock and Mo would sit next to me and we called him Trader Mo. He would always jump up, sit right next to me while I was at the kitchen table and while I was trading. So good old Trader Mo is no longer with us. He had the thyroid thing that started kicking in about 2 years ago. We got it under control. He had a year where it was sort of doing fairly decent and he was sort of okay. Never really got back to his true old self. And then a couple of months ago, it just started to get a little bit worse and he declined pretty rapidly. I think it was last Friday morning at like 12:37 in the morning. I was up with Mo and he went ahead. I was able to pet him and stay with him for about an hour leading up to when he finally passed. But he is gone in a nice, peaceful death here at the house. And he was loved and all of that. So for any of you who have reached out from time to time asking how my good friend Mo is, he's gone, but the pain and the suffering is over. So that is that. Okay, I want to move on to something really kind of cool and fun, shifting over to something that's not sad or dreary here. But I was walking in my yard because I always have to go out multiple times a day, check on the bees, make sure they're okay, talk to myself, but pretend I'm talking to the bees. You guys know how that one is. And I always glance over at the swarm traps, and they've been pretty active lately. They've been receiving a lot of traffic, and I've always enjoyed seeing that, but I'm also, you know, cautiously optimistic. I recognize that it is not unusual for a lot of bees to show up and start checking things out just as curious foragers, but over time, you know, curious foragers can certainly become scouts, and you want to be paying attention to that and aware of that. So I'm watching them and enjoying, you know, their visits every day. Today, I think it got to about 90 degrees Fahrenheit. And I'll go ahead and take a shot at it. I think it's at 28 maybe Celsius. I don't know. Taking a guess there. But I went outside to take a look at some things. I looked over and I thought, wow, that's a lot more activity than I normally see. So I go over and I'm checking it out a little bit. Definitely a lot of bees coming in and out. But they were still doing that thing they do where they kind of bounce around the outside and, you know, they're checking for the overall security. It really looks like they're just taking measurements so they know the exact height, size, depth of this potential cavity. And you've heard me mention before that there was this unmanaged kind of feral colony in the tree right next to my house. It's been there for about a year. I watched them swarm in last year from my neighbors and I kept hoping, you know, please, please let me catch the swarm from that tree. I want to catch them. I want them to be mine, especially recognizing that that queen has now overwintered. I am just reestablishing the home apiary now, so I don't have a breeder queen. So if I can get a good swarm captured, and especially if it's that one with a queen that I know can overwinter, she is going to be ideal for me to set up as my new breeder queen until something else comes along. So I go back out a little while later, probably about an hour and a half or two after I first saw them. And then it was pretty crystal clear to me that we had captured that swarm. But the one kind of big giveaway that I noticed was there were two drones hanging out by the entrance. Now, as we all know, right, drones aren't there to help. You know, they're not stopping by to do any kind of security, make sure it's safe before the young ladies establish this new home. They're just looking for a free meal. But I saw a couple drones there. I know that the drones aren't going to be scouting. So I thought, wow, that's a pretty positive sign. That's pretty cool. But here's the part I want you to pay attention to. This is pretty neat. I watched a couple of bees and I saw, I think, at least two, maybe even three different groups of paired bees near the entrance of the swarm trap facing each other, mouths in contact, right? Looks like they're kind of making out with each other. But what we're actually watching and what I was able to observe is what's called trophallaxis. And most people think of this as just food sharing between the bees. And yes, that's definitely part of it. But in this case, it is so much more than that, because when the bees engage in trophallaxis, they are transferring pheromones, nutrients, enzymes, and information. It's not just here, have a drink. It's literally how the colony is communicating and maintaining its identity as the single superorganism. So during a swarm move-in, trophallaxis is part of how the scouts are spreading the message that this is the right place, this is the home. So what looked like a couple of bees giving each other a little smoochy smoo kissy wissy there at the entrance was actually the colony's nervous system kind of firing off and things just happening as they should be. But it was really neat to see that. And I kept wanting to I got to get up there and get a video of this. And then I was maybe I need to pull back and give them space. And I just thought, you know what? Let them do their thing. I'll just enjoy observing from the side here and I won't get in the way. But I am really excited about that. I reached out to the folks over at Swarm Sauce and thanked them for providing me with Swarm Sauce. So again, it's swarmsauce.com if you folks haven't had a chance to check them out. They were the source of the lure that we used this year. Obviously, it's very effective and worked well. So that's exciting. Now, we do have a big announcement here. And I've been sitting back here and I've been looking at the calendar. And I had to be honest with you guys, man, I've been a little bit concerned when I see the dates and the timelines and everything. And, you know, we have been covering a lot of important content. And I am truly, genuinely very excited about the direction of beekeeping for newbies and where we're heading. But when I was mapping everything out that I need to get to all of you, I mean, when we're talking about things that are pre-summer, these are like all spring-related things. So talking about swarm season, nectar flow, varroa pressure, splits, adding in honey supers, a summer dearth, if that happens where you are, I'm looking at all of the episodes and all of the material that still needs to be created. And I just realized that I can't do it, guys. If we stay on our current schedule, we're not going to have everything over to you until probably sometime in September. And that's just going to be too late. So, I mean, the bees aren't going to be able to wait that long. They can't wait till September. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to do something that I was a little bit afraid to have to announce to you. But starting effective this coming Monday, we're going to roll 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, 5 episodes a week through the end of May. And that should get us about 30 or so episodes over the next 6 weeks, because I just love you guys too much to let you go into the summer unprepared. So I'm going to be doing a full court press, because there's just so much that we've got on the list and I want to get it out to you guys. Now, some of you might be saying, but Jeff, what about the app that you're launching on April 28th? I thought you were heads down and focused on getting all that stuff ready. I absolutely am. That is still going on and everything is well on target and on track to be delivered on time. So we are not at risk or at jeopardy of missing our deadlines for that. And I don't even have a choice, because I'm not the one launching. It's actually the company that does all of the app back-end work. They're the ones rolling it out on the 28th. So it is definitely happening. All right, everybody. So let's get into what we're talking about today, which we've already kind of kicked off a little bit by talking about the swarm that I caught. And I want you to kind of reframe things a little bit in your mind about what swarming is, because some people have a colony and they think, oh, my colony swarmed and this is bad and I failed. And I don't want you to think of yourself as a failure or think of the colony as failing in some way if there's a swarm. A swarm is actually from a colony health and the colony's well-being. It's a successful thing. You know, from their perspective, they're doing everything right. They got really strong in the spring. They're healthy. They're full of bees and they are ready to reproduce. Now, as you know, the existing old queen would typically leave. Roughly about half the workers would leave with her, and then the new queen's going to stay behind. The new queen will emerge from a queen cell. Hopefully, she successfully mates and returns and starts, you know, she has a leg up now. She's already got an existing colony. They have resources, but she's going to get mated within a week or so, maybe 2 weeks, and she's back and up and running, and, you know, they're not going to miss too much action. Now, the colony that is leaving with the original queen, they've got a lot of work to do. Now, for you as the beekeeper, it's kind of a concerning situation, right? You just lost half the workforce. You're at the very beginning of what, you know, is kind of like the peak, the beginning of the peak, if that makes sense. You get to the peak of the season when everything is in flow for whatever the flow looks like in your area. So we're getting really close to the peak of that. So I want to kind of walk through a few things, make sure we fully understand kind of the why behind it, and talk a little bit about how we can manage things to maybe hopefully prevent it if they haven't swarmed already, and see what we can do to maybe curb that instinct a little bit. So we know that the colonies want to swarm to reproduce, but I think it's important to talk about the underlying source that is driving everything to that swarm. There is obviously pheromonal things that are at play. And when we have queen pheromone by itself, you're going to have queen pheromone gets distributed throughout the hive as the colony gets larger and larger. Sometimes getting all of that queen pheromone propagated can get a little bit diluted. That's kind of one element of things. As they continue to backfill and load up all the available space inside the hive with nectar, at some point in time, there could be a little bit of contention on space, and they decide, well, we're going to go ahead and backfill this into the brood space. So now you have this imbalance. You've got a lot of forager pheromone. You've got some potentially diluted queen pheromone, maybe. You've got an absence or at least a diminishing brood pheromone. You have no more space left for the queen. She's got to crank out 1,500 to 2,000 eggs a day when she's at her peak for the season. So she's scrambling around these frames trying to figure out where she's going to lay eggs. So all of these things come together to form this perfect storm. And this is what drives your swarming behavior. So you, as the beekeeper, you might say, well, Jeff, that's all well and good, but I mean, this is my first year. I'm still trying to figure things out. I have no idea really what to look for. So I want to walk you through a few things that you're probably going to start seeing in advance of some of these swarm indicators. So one thing you want to look at is what's called a queen cup. And what it's going to be is they usually end up being wherever you would see a swarm cell, which is typically at the bottom third of your brood space. And it is the foundation that ultimately will become a queen cell. So it starts as a little bit of a cup, and it's just a round, it's probably about maybe like the size of like a Sharpie, the end of a Sharpie, or a slightly larger than a pencil. It's about that diameter and just a little circle on the wax comb, and seeing them is normal. This is just something that bees will build regularly as they're building out their spring resources and they're laying brood and they're managing brood. All of that is normal to see. Definitely not something to be nervous about, but you do want to make sure that you're keeping an eye on them, because obviously the queen cup being the foundation for the queen cell, that's where they're ultimately going to have the queen lay in those cups to make a swarm cell. So that's one big indicator. I mentioned earlier about seeing, you know, backfilling of honey into the brood space. So let me kind of explain this a little bit more. Let's say that you've started out with a single deep and you put, maybe it's a package or nuke, doesn't really matter what you had in there. And as they grow out, you're going to notice that the middle is always that brood space. That's where they're laying brood. They're going to be pushing honey typically towards the outsides. When that little cluster is kind of small, you might see two brood frames, and they may have honey just to the outside of those. And when you want to make that brood space bigger, you just kind of push things left and right and drop a frame right in the middle. And that helps them to continue drawing it out and continue to using that space for what you would like them to use it for, which is brood. But that middle space will sometimes be a little bit easier to drop things into than drawing of new comb. Now, you do need a nectar flow to get comb drawn. Bees don't just make comb for the sake of it, which is a kind of a thing that introduces some confusion. A lot of people think that if you just put your boxes in there and you've got your foundation in place, the bees are just going to draw up the whole thing so that it's all ready for whenever they get resources. Not the case. They are only going to draw up the amount of comb they need to accomplish whatever task is at hand. They've got a nectar flow on, they're going to make space for the nectar, and they're going to use the brood space for raising brood. As that nectar starts to taper, a lot of times they say, well, you know what? The flow is starting to taper, we're not seeing as much coming in, let's just use the space we have. And they're very good at this. This is another area where we can definitely go off on some tangents. I'm going to try and keep things reined in a little bit. But the more we allow the bees to do what's natural for them long term, I think the better off we're going to be. Sometimes doing nothing is the best solution for bees, but I'm going to try and keep myself contained today and stay on task so we don't end up doing a 2-hour episode. But if you go in and you open up the hive and you get into those brood spaces where they've typically been raising brood, you see capped brood or brood in all phases, larval, eggs, whatever you see through those frames, and you recognize that's what you've seen there before, and you've got that in your notes as a reference, when you look in there and you see it loaded up with nectar, that's going to be problematic. That's going to be a red flag to you to say, uh-oh, things are probably getting serious. I think swarming is probably going to happen fairly soon. Another thing that is probably one of the most obvious, but the crowding. When you first start out with your package or your nuke, when you pull those frames out in those first, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 inspections, you can see everything. That's where I say, get used to seeing that queen and what she looks like early on. Because as that population really ramps up and you get 40, 50, 60,000 bees in there, finding that queen can get really, really tricky. But once you know what to look for, it definitely gets easier, which again is why I try to get people looking at them early on. But when you go in and you see those frames completely packed with bees, and you add that on to the other things we've been talking about, again, that helps to further solidify your theory or your hypothesis that swarming is potentially imminent. Now, you see the queen cup that we talked about. If an egg is laid into that cup, it is then referred to as a charged queen cell or a charged queen cup. From there, it will continue to develop into a queen cell. From egg being laid to the queen emerging is 16 days, and it's about day 8 when that queen cell gets capped. It's pretty much game on. It is challenging to stop a colony from swarming once that queen cell is capped. They are going to start doing a lot of different things to get prepared for swarming. They are going to be actively scouting for a new home. A couple of days leading up to it, they are going to start restricting their feed to that queen. They want her to stop laying, because when she stops laying, if you've ever noticed the difference between your queen, when you inspect your hives and you're looking through the colony and you see her on a frame laying eggs and she's big and plump and just looking really healthy, and you compare that to the queen you see in a queen cage, she gets really small when she's not actively laying. And that's what they want. They want her to be small so that she can fly when they swarm. So they will start restricting her food, and they will basically start doing everything they can to get ready to leave. So this is a time where you really have to take things seriously if you're seeing capped queen cells. Now, one of the more common remedies or ways to address this overpopulation and this, you know, no available space and all of that is to, of course, add more space. You may add another brood box. You may add another honey super. There's different ways of doing things depending on where you are, where you are in the flow, what your strategy is, the hardware that you're using. But adding space early, and I say early as being really important, right? You can't wait until there's queen cells all over the place and then say, oh, I better throw some honey supers on. A little bit late for that at that point. But sometimes just adding space alone doesn't solve the problem. And this is important. I want to mention this to you because this is something that I say pretty regularly. But if you are new to beekeeping and maybe you're new to the podcast and you know you didn't go back from episode one and listen all the way to here, so you're just kind of trying to get a feel for things and try to understand some basic concepts, there is what I often refer to as people space and bee space. When I say people space, I can walk up to a hive stand. I can put a bottom board down. I can put two deeps, queen excluder, four honey supers. I can load the whole thing up with drawn comb or whatever. I guess for this illustration, let's just say the whole thing is just wax foundation on wooden frames. The whole thing is there, and I install a colony in the very first deep at the bottom. You might think what I'm about to say can't happen or won't happen, and I promise you it can. Now, obviously, we would never do that kind of a setup, but to illustrate a point, there is clearly tons of space. The colony will sometimes be building out within the space that they have. They will go left or right and draw those comb or draw that foundation out into comb. And then for whatever reason, they say, I don't know about that space to the left or the right or even above them. They don't recognize that as available space. Like we, as people, we see that space. We know there's tons of room. They don't see it in the same way. And I'm not going to go into it in this specific episode. We have talked about it quite a bit, but we are going to cover it as we talk about expansion and some of the tips and tricks and things that we do. What we do is try to break things up a little bit to force them to recognize the space. One of the tricks that we talk about a lot is, let's say you had six or seven frames in that bottom brood box and they're all drawn out. Things are getting crowded. They're not drawing anything left or right. We're going to take a frame from the outside with wax foundation and drop it right into the middle of that space. And that's going to encourage them to start drawing that up. Now, we are assuming that they are still on a nectar flow. We're not going to do this at a time of year when there's no nectar flow, because then you're just breaking up the brood space for no reason. But on a flow, you drop that in there, they'll draw that thing up within a week. They will be very fast and very efficient with it. And then when we need them to move up into the next box, we go to that same middle slot and we just drag a frame right up to the top with a bunch of brood on it. Because all of the bees that are hanging out all over that brood, those are nurse bees. And they're going to follow that brood wherever you take it. So you just bring that up to the top. Now you are one, not to the top, but in the example I gave, you go one box higher, bring it up into that box, backfill the other one with some wax foundation. They'll draw out the one and they'll start using that space up top. But again, you have to learn to violate the bee space to make them take full advantage of it. Simply throwing a honey super on sometimes does not prevent swarming because they don't recognize the space. Sometimes simply making the brood space bigger by adding a brood box doesn't solve the problem. So we will talk about this some more in the coming weeks as we go through different techniques and everything, but I wanted you to be at least thinking about that. And another thing that kind of comes up fairly regularly, and I figured I would go ahead and address it now, is people will say sometimes, well, okay, I know I've been told when it's around 70% utilization or so, you know, 7 out of 10 frames, for example, that's about the time I want to be making more room and expanding and things like that. I've heard people say like, hey, should I add one box or should I add two boxes? Like, how do I know what to add or how much or when? There are definitely times, and there are beekeepers with a lot of experience who will absolutely add two or maybe even three honey supers at a time. If you're in an area where you're traveling to multiple locations and you're addressing bee needs at multiple apiaries in a given area, and you won't be back to that apiary for maybe two more weeks, dropping a couple of honey supers on to allow the colony to expand while you're gone is a very normal process and procedure. For your DIY hobbyist home beekeeper, that's not necessary because you're following your rules, or hopefully my rules, but you're doing an inspection every week. Go ahead and put just a single honey super or add a single box on. Just do them one at a time and let them get that space taken care of. And then as they need to expand, you can kind of continue expanding with them. Now, my personal favorite way to prevent swarming is I like to do splits. And we are going to dedicate an episode to splitting and lots of different splitting techniques and the ways it can be done and various considerations around it. But I am going to tell you one that I refer to as the synthetic swarm. And what we can do is we know that the colony wants to swarm. We know that half of them want to leave with the existing queen and make a new queen and make themselves into two colonies. So I'll go ahead and set up an entire hive somewhere else in my bee yard. I will go into the hive that I know wants to swarm, and I will go ahead and take the queen. If I can get her by herself and physically grab her and put her into a queen cage. If not, that's okay too. Just take a nuke box or some kind of a transporting box that you can close that has ventilation so that she can get, you know, the whole colony and the bees you put in there can get fresh air, but they can't escape. And go ahead and load that up with five frames from the primary colony. Put a couple of honey frames in there, put a few brood frames in there. And then go ahead and take that queen and that nuke of resources and take all of them and move them over to that other location you've established. But this is what I call the synthetic swarm, because now the queen has left, a bunch of bees have left, and all of that pressure within the hive to swarm is going to be reduced. So that is my favorite thing to do. I think it's really effective. It allows you to grow your apiary. It allows you to continue expanding, because as a beekeeper, you have two primary missions. One, you always have to be expanding. And two, you have to spend every penny you have on bee-related things. So this is just following that natural course. That's all it is. It's not unusual. Tell your boyfriend, girlfriend, wife, spouse, whatever. Let them know, like, hey, it's not my rules. I have to spend money in beekeeping because it's a requirement as a beekeeper. I always have to keep expanding and growing. All right, now we're going to talk about a couple of, I guess I would say, some common sort of mistakes that people make that are every year, same things happen. I think that some people will ignore the urgency. Like, I don't think that they fully have a grasping of the way that the colony expands and contracts throughout the year. I can tell you 100%, I had no idea, probably for a few years. But you have a massive and very, very quick and aggressive expansion in the spring. I mean, you have a cluster of bees that overwintered, and sometimes they can get down into like the four digits, like 5,000, 6,000, 7,000. You can basically be left with like a package of bees almost, just a very small little cluster sometimes. And then that will ramp up in about a 2-month period to 50 or 60,000 bees. It's just absolutely insane. And I think that we often underestimate just how quickly they can grow and how quickly things can become very congested. So that's a common problem. The other thing that is really important, adding space too early. This is something I've seen people, they just start to see a little bit of growth in the spring or even late winter, and they want to start throwing boxes on. And what ends up happening is you have this nice warm weather during some of these spring days, but the nights can get really, really cold. And now what you've done is you've added this additional space to the cavity that now has to be heated at night and has to be kept warm. That can definitely introduce some challenges. The other thing to be mindful of is sometimes people don't kick that inspection cycle in fast enough. What I like to do in my area where I am is the first warm day in February is the first time I'm taking a peek. But then it becomes kind of like every warm day in February. I'm looking a little bit. I'm keeping an eye on things because it happens fast. And like I said, the colony is going to grow very quickly. So I want to be in the hive at, I don't want to say as early as possible. I'm trying to be careful how I say this, because if I say as early as possible, someone's going to go when it's, you know, 10 Celsius, 48, 50 Fahrenheit. And you can, like, if you have to go in at that temperature, you can. But when you're doing these things very early on in the season, you really got to be careful, because they are going to start raising brood, and that cold air coming in can really be devastating for the brood. They've got to keep them in that, like, I think it is 33, 34 Celsius. And then, you know, in that like 93 to 95 Fahrenheit kind of range, they've got to keep them really, really warm. So you definitely don't want to be hanging out like where I am now. If you're like, oh, well, it's mid-April, I guess I need to start inspecting now. No, mine arrived here in March, but I was helping a couple of friends not too far from me like the second week of March, we were getting into some of them. And again, we still had a lot of cold weather, but we were getting into them because we need to make sure that they've got space in the right places. And we're, you know, getting an assessment on things. We're checking out for emergency feeding and things like that. Another common problem is misidentifying queen cups with queen cells. And then it gets a little panicky, right? Where it's just, oh my gosh, oh no, it's here, it's over, it's all falling apart. So just look at pictures. If you ever have trouble finding a picture, you can come into our Discord room and ask. Somebody will get you a picture. You can message me, whatever. I'm in the Discord room kind of on and off. But if you can't find a picture, please ask somebody and we will get you a picture so you know what a queen cup looks like. But seeing a queen cup and thinking it's a queen cell is something that is normal for people to have happen sometimes. And I don't want you to panic, okay? No matter what happens, try not to panic because everything has a solution. Even if you go in and you say, I didn't really have this plan, but there was a family member that got sick and we had to go out of town for 2 weeks unexpected, you're going to come back to a different colony. You're going to have some different things going on that maybe you weren't planning on or that maybe you weren't expecting. And that's okay, but be prepared for it. But don't freak out. Don't panic. Everything can be fixed. As long as you still have a queen, or worst case scenario, as long as you still have some eggs and young larvae, we can fix pretty much anything. Another problem, and this one is really important. A lot of people have gone into their hives and they're doing everything right. They are doing their weekly inspections. They're keeping an eye on things. And for whatever reason, they missed a swarm cell. They just completely missed it. And that's the thing. It only takes one. You can go in there and there can be 10 of them and you can tear down 9 out of 10. And it's the one that's left behind is all they need to swarm. And that happens all the time. But where it can be really, really bad, this is the part that I wanted to emphasize. Just because you go in and see swarm cells does not mean you have to rip all of them out. It is entirely possible, and in some cases, depending on your last inspection and what you've been seeing, even probable sometimes, that colony may have already swarmed. They are long gone, and you are a day, 2 days away, maybe three, from a new virgin queen emerging from that queen cell to replace the one who just left. And you, being the diligent beekeeper, came in and ripped out all the queen cells, and now you are hopelessly queenless because, remember, they restricted the feeding of the queen leading up to the swarm, so there are no eggs anywhere. And by the time you figure this out, the young larvae that you may have selected from to become, or that they may have selected from to make a queen, they're too old. So that is a big one. So before you start tearing down queen cells, track down your queen, find her. And if you can't for some reason, you're just not sure, go ahead and do a split, basically taking those queen cells with a few frames, put those into the nuke and move them aside, just like we talked about doing with the queen. Now, worst case scenario, you could have the queen in there with it, and then the queen swarms from the small box. And I mean, that could happen, but at least move some resources around to give you the opportunity to at least salvage a queen. Maybe you put a few queen cells into a two-frame nuke and you have those off the side, just to give yourself some level of assurance in case that queen has already swarmed. Sometimes it's not obvious. Usually you go in and you realize, if you've been inspecting regularly, you're like, oh no, there are nowhere near the amount of bees that used to be in here. Something is wrong. This is not good. But sometimes, you know, you just aren't quite in tune with everything yet and you don't really know. So that's kind of a protective way to maybe at least get a couple of those queen cells somewhere else in case you end up needing them. They can always go out, get that queen mated, and then it turns out that they haven't swarmed yet and everything is fine. And then now you just have another queen. So lots of different ways to handle that. And like I said, we'll dive a little bit more into that. I want to just talk to you real quick about the Beekeeping for Newbies app that's launching on April 28th. This is an AI app. It is built through my entire training library, and it is designed for you to be able to use in your apiary. You're going to have it in the palm of your hand, and you can just walk into the apiary and use it while you're doing work with your bees. Just go to beekeepingfornewbies.com/training and you can be added to the list to be notified when that training is released. And don't forget that we have the pre-inspection checklist. This is a checklist that I really wish that I had when I first started beekeeping, because I was always leaving the house and not bringing all the things I needed, or I'd be walking back and forth from my bee shed. It's just a free little pre-inspection checklist that has a little tips that you can kind of use as you're walking out the door to go through and be like, okay, yep, 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 okay, good, we got everything. Now, also, don't forget the Discord room that is linked from the Beekeeping for Newbies homepage, and we got a lot of chat going on in there. It's now starting to finally ramp up for the beginning of the season, so you can get over there and you can talk to people about bee-related things and all that good stuff. So take care, be kind to one another. Remember that I love you. There's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon. I know how intimidating beekeeping can be, especially in those first couple of years, and not knowing what you need, what to do, or where to find help can be downright scary. That's why I created the AI-assisted Beekeeping for Newbies mobile app to be right there with you as you start your beekeeping journey. Loaded up with checklists, guides, and one of my favorites, a bunch of queen bee photos to help you get better at locating them during inspections. I created this app to provide you with a single source to help jumpstart your learning and make you a better beekeeper. Go to studio.com/beekeeper. That's studio.com/beekeeper to take advantage of a limited time 20% off launch special.